Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
U.S. exports of bulk products for the first 9 months of fiscal year 2024 through June were $44.4 billion, down 17% from the previous year.
Looking at the key numbers on bulk product exports, USDA economist Bart Kenner.
U.S. exports of wheat through June 2024 were $4.1 billion, down 17% from the previous year. Corn exports were $10.4 billion, down 6% from the previous year. Soybean exports, $21.2 billion, down 28% from the previous year. And cotton exports were $4.3 billion, down 13% from the previous year.
This is Agriculture Today.
USDA out with a much-anticipated report on Monday. It's the first estimate of production based on surveys of farmers in their fields. Talking about the August World Ag Supply-Demand Estimates and Crop Production Report. Let's break them down one at a time. For corn, USDA says 82.7 million acres to be harvested, 183.1 bushels per acre. So the corn production at 15.1 billion bushels would be the third highest ever and a record for yield. Average farm price, $4.20 per bushel. That's down 35.8% from 2022-23. USDA said 86.3 million acres of soybeans to be harvested this year. And with that, the production would be a record high because yield at 53.2 bushels per acre leads us to a final crop of 4.59 billion bushels. Now, the season average farm price, $10.80, and down 31.5%. from 2022-23. Also, soy oil prices down 35.7% and soy meal down 29.2% from, again, 2022-2023. According to USDA, harvested acreage of all wheat at 37.9 million acres yield 52.2 bushels per acre, gives us a crop of 1.98 billion bushels. Average price, $5.70 per bushel, down 35.4%. Now, global ending stocks for 2024-2025, according to USDA, for wheat, would be the lowest in 9 years. And cotton production up 25% over last year, but abandonment now at 23%. That's up 6% from USDA's July estimate. And the final numbers for cotton, 8.63 million acres to be harvested. And that is down 11%. The yield, 840 pounds per acre, gives us a final crop of 15.1 million bales. Again, down 1.9 million bales from their July estimate. Average price, 66 cents, down 22.2% from 2022-23. The sorghum numbers, 94 million bushel crop with a yield of 52.9 bushels per acre. USDA expects sorghum to average $4.20 a bushel. That's down 34.2% from 2022-2023. In addition, a couple of other reports out. The Consumer Inflation Expectations Report from the New York Fed showing 1 year inflation expectations by consumers remain unchanged. 3 year expectations fell. And inflation expectations have increased for medical care, college, and rent, but are down for gas and food. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Global wheat production raised this month. Globally, that would be a new record, wheat production.
Dr. Mark Jackanowski is chairman of the World Ag Outlook Board.
Going through the countries, so Australia up 1 million tons. Basically some improved conditions in Western Australia, recent rains, better rains there. European Union down 2 million tons. That is mainly France harvest results and just excess rainfall that we've been talking about for the past few months now. Ukraine, wheat production up. That's government data. And Kazakhstan, we'll talk about that next. That mainly reflects some really good, unusually good growing conditions for them this year. So let's focus just a little bit on Kazakhstan here. So the green area, that's the part of the country where most of the wheat is produced in country. And the main story here is just that it's been raining, and it's been raining a lot in Kazakhstan. And keeping in mind that this is a country where it's usually pretty arid, so this level of rainfall, and maybe in a lot of other countries, could be detrimental, but in Kazakhstan, a relatively arid climate, it's welcome, very favorable. This is just a ranking over the past 30 years of this year's rainfall relative to recent history. So well above average rainfall. And it's showing up in satellite imagery, and the VHI is very good conditions. The way you read this is the greens, blues, and purples are what you want to see. And that is what we're seeing in the main wheat growing areas of Kazakhstan. And also, just more data, the NDVI as well. We're above the upper range of recent history for the crop conditions in Kazakhstan. So with that, we raised yields this month, up 10% from last month, and that would be up about 32% year over year. And so this, again, has changed. It's all yield-driven, all based on those favorable rainfall totals. Global wheat balance sheet. I put up the old crop year here. That's essentially final at this point. We just incorporated the final trade data for the marketing year. So that old balance sheet is pretty well set. Focusing on 2024, 2025, the current crop year. Few things to point out here. Wheat feed use raised this month, 2.8 million tons. Few things driving that, mainly increase in the EU, feed quality wheat there, driving that, and also higher feed use in Ukraine and Kazakhstan, reflecting larger crops. Trade up 2 million tons. Higher exports out of Ukraine and Australia, partially offset by lower exports out of the EU. U.S. balance sheet. Here again, I put up the old crop here. Just one small change there. It's worth noting food use. Food use up 1 million bushels. That is based on the most recent NAST's flour milling report. And you can see so that raised food use for the old crop year, we carried that through into the new crop year as well, up a bit. So now focusing on the new crop year, incorporating the production information from NAST, along with the small change in increased food use, most of that NAS production change just tightens up ending stocks. As you can see, we didn't change our price forecast this month.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
In the old days, it doesn't seem like that far away from me now. But
Scott Shalady is a former broker and now TV personality, the cow guy.
In New York, they had pits for trading equities, and what that means is a bunch of traders representing either themselves or other bigger entities are in a ring together, and they make deals with hand signals across, a 10 to 20, maybe 50-foot section of a ring where all the buying and selling comes together. And it helps to be big, tall, wide. It helps to have a jacket that would attract a lot of attention, and a black and white cow jacket did that too. Anywhere, I mean, I trade that on the floors. In London, I've been on the floor in Paris before it went electronic, been on the floors of places all over the world, Asia, Germany, and obviously the U.S. And everybody had kind of the same thing, where they had a ring or a pit where all the business and buyers and sellers came together, and that's where they traded or they did deals with buyers and sellers in an open outcry environment, kind of like an auction. But at the same time, you had to attract some sort of attention somehow, and it was good to be tall and wide. You took up space, and at the same time, it was also good if you had on something that attracted attention, and a black and white cow jacket did that. But it was, and to take it one step further, Tony, is that, you know, I did a lot of traveling back in my younger days when I was living in Europe, and you go down the concourses of all those airports, and you see, at the time, CNN had kind of had a monopoly on financial news. And I thought to myself how boring it must be to see all these guys just with blue suits, white shirts, and red ties. It'd be interesting if I could catch some eyeballs, maybe if I was up there, you know, in a black and white jacket. And I approached the exchange because that was going to be my first port of call. And they took me on for a couple of trials, and one thing led to another, and it just exploded because all the money coming in wanted to talk to the guy in the black and white jacket in the cow in the corn pit, and at the same time, some of them started to get to like me, and they had me back on more often. And like I said, one thing led to another, from that trading, you know, in a corn pit with a black and white jacket on to being a pundit on TV. It really might sound like a big leap, but it really was kind of natural.
It says at the end of the day, trading really hasn't changed.
So when it comes to the type of trade, that really isn't that, you know, that's not that different. You know, we've seen, we're going into a period here, I think, you know, that looks very, very similar to 2014 to 2019 when it comes to ag. And we've got some ratios like our stocks to usage ratio and say corn. This is looking similar to say 2014. And if it is similar, we're going to have a couple years here where we're going to go sideways for a little while. And that's what commodities do. And that's okay. But to getting to those prices, yeah, the market is very volatile. The market goes down fast and it goes up fast. And that's all different. That didn't used to be the way it was, because if you got to remember, there's people in a ring or a pit that are doing the counting of all the contracts that they're selling and they're buying. And so the market had a natural governor on it. It slowed it down a little bit. But now when it's electronic, there's no governor, which just can be a bad thing during mistakes. But generally speaking, there's no governor. So you can sell as many contracts as you want as fast as you can, or at least as fast as a computer can do it. So that's changed a little bit that way. Getting the business done has changed, but really the business hasn't changed. So on a chart, it's the same business. Getting things executed is not the same business, but all in all, this does look similar to, 2014 to 2019, I would say. But it doesn't, nothing lasts forever, and we're setting ourselves up, I think, for a good, 5 years, but it might take a year or two to get there.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
It certainly is a big deal because USDA often keeps their numbers May, June, July very close to what they call trend yield, an assumption of normal weather and normal yield response in that case as well.
Rich Nelson is chief strategist with McHenry, Illinois-based Allendale.
So we're now getting our first understanding of how these past few weeks of weather have impacted these crops on a realistic basis. So number one, we have a new update regarding yields, what the trade feels is a more realistic discussion. Number two, and also new for this year as well, is we are now seeing those farm program acres incorporated a couple months earlier than usual. So we have both changes on yields as well as acres for this report.
Says the corn story was somewhat bullish.
You know what? The corn story was actually not as bad as we expected to see. It is true that we saw this yield increase on today's report, 183.1. So now we are suggesting the nationwide corn crop is lightly above trend yield. Important for the report, though, this was countered by a surprising drop on the acreage side. We saw this acreage drop on the corn side for 700,000. So our net increase for production, only 47 million bushels. And on top of that, USDA was aggressive with making some yield making some demand changes. So we actually saw a net decline in new crop corn stocks on this report here.
But looking at USDA season average farm price projections tells a story.
It's very clear that this year certainly does represent a change from the prior 3 years of more supplies for all these crops. And you mentioned this 420 cash corn price. That's the lowest here in 5 years. It's the lowest since 2019. And we are certainly seeing a change reverberating throughout the farm community as well here.
But the soybean story was definitely bearish.
It certainly was a surprise, and it was a surprise from two factors. You know, we did see that yield increase, and that kind of had been expected a little bit there. So we did have yields just like corn are now above trend, in this case 2% over trend. What we were surprised about, though, was a full 1 million acre increase on the acreage side. So lower corn acres, but much higher bean acres. So this now has a total supply, production, beginning stocks and imports, a total supply, which is 500 million bushels over last year, and in fact, the second largest total supply ever. So our surprise here for us from that side was, well, ending stocks going from 435 million bushels, now 560. So definitely a bearish soybean situation got quite a bit worse here on today's update.
And there's the idea that the soybean yields could actually increase before the end of the year.
This market is already trading, even with today's price, it is already trading a price now implying higher yields still in front of us beyond this report. So I can't discount that argument too much. And on top of what he mentioned about our recent rains, which have been positive for most areas in the Midwest, on top of that story, we also have our discussion here for soybeans of maybe some question about exports. USDA offset some of this production increase today with an increase for exports. Problem is, we were not even meeting their prior July estimate there. So certainly for soybeans, you can argue this is definitely a tough story for us from both a yield issue as well as new crop export sales.
And this is Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Moving into corn.
Numbers from the World Ag Supply Demand Estimates Report. Dr. Mark Jekinowski, chair of the World Ag Outlook Board.
Old crop year, 2023-2024. Argentina corn production down 2 million tons this month. That harvest is almost complete at this point. So this is government data based on harvest results. Shrinking the size of that crop by a bit. Also worth noting, Ukraine raised the back year crop by 1.5 million tons. And essentially what this just reflects is the fact that they've been exporting a lot, and you can't export more than you grow. So, it suggests that our previous forecast or previous estimate of the size of their crop was probably underestimated. So we have to raise that crop. So we raised by 1.5 million tons. Now focusing on the new crop year or upcoming crop year. Change in the United States, we'll talk about, of course, in a couple slides from now. Otherwise, you'll see the increase in the United States is more than offset by decreases in much of the rest of the world, including lower production in the EU. That is mainly lower production in Southeast Europe and Serbia. Where it's been hot and dry. That heat and dryness also extends into Ukraine and Russia. We'll talk a little bit about Ukraine, but you can see there we lowered both Ukraine and Russia, Serbia and the EU. Let's focus just real quickly on Ukraine. So this is the main area. This is, map for Ukraine, main production areas for corn. And then we're also going to look a little bit at sunflower seed. So Ukraine's other major fall harvest crop, grown in much the same areas, but concentrated a little bit further to the east. And the main story here in Ukraine this summer during growing season is it's been relatively dry. Corn production forecast lowered this month to 27.2 million metric tons, down 2% from last month. That would be about a 16% drop year over year. And this is mostly a yield change, but also a small area decrease year over year, as you can see as well. Similar with sunflower seed, yields also down there as well, reflecting the heat and dryness. So next, let's focus on the global corn balance sheet back year, 2023-2024. Main thing to mention there, global trade reduced 400,000 tons this month. That is mainly a smaller crop in Argentina, so lower exports there, partially offset by higher exports out of the Ukraine and U.S. Now, for the new crop year, the upcoming crop year, feed use down 1.9 million metric tons, lower feed use in the EU, reflecting a smaller crop there, and then a lot of small offsets as well. Trade, global trade reduced 300,000 tons, have some offsets there. Lower exports out of the EU, Ukraine, Russia, and Serbia, partially offset by higher exports out of the U.S. Ending stocks down globally, mainly driven by lower stocks in the EU, Serbia, and U.S.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Animal activists and lab-grown meat was a topic of conversation from the Nebraska Governor's Ag and Economic Development Summit. Reporting, I'm Jesse Harding Campbell. Speaking on these topics was Jack Hubbard. He is Executive Director for the Center of Environment and Welfare. Jack, as we get going here, explain to us a little bit about what you discussed with the attendees at the summit.
Sure. Specifically, I came and talked about some of the various and evolving threats to animal agriculture and agriculture as a whole, which clearly has an impact on Nebraska. Specifically, we kicked off the presentation talking about the two largest animal rights groups in the United States, the ASPCA, the Humane Society of the United States, that collectively raise over $500 million a year from the public. Most of the public believes that these groups are operating local pet shelters when in fact they're not. The Humane Society of the United States runs zero, and the ASPCA has an adoption center in Manhattan. And what's unfortunate is that these groups raise a ton of money using images of cats and dogs, but then use a portion of that money to attack agriculture. And they do that through litigation, legislation, attacking it in the public sphere. And one of the things I wanted to do is make sure that this audience was aware that these two organizations do not operate animal shelters in the way that much of the public thinks, and only 2% of their budgets actually go to pet shelters as financial grants. So that was number one. And number two, I also wanted to make sure we educated the group and the leaders of Nebraska here about lab-grown meat, which was approved for sale in the United States about a year ago by the FDA, and what this new technology could mean for agriculture states and what some states are doing to take action to make sure that consumers have transparency about how this stuff is made, what's in it, so that they can make up their own minds.
How has policies changed over the years in regards to animal activists or new and upcoming for lab-grown meat?
You know, that's a big question. What I can tell you is that the anti-agriculture movement has gotten more aggressive. They raise a heck of a lot of money a year. We're seeing more and more animal rights groups, environmental groups, and even some labor groups align to attack the industry on various fronts. And that's a real shame, because when you look at U.S. agriculture, we truly are the envy of the world. And, you know, we have one of the most affordable, abundant, and safe, you know, food supply chains in the world. Other countries strive to be more like us. And there's a group of people that sit around trying to figure out how to disrupt and destroy what's a modern miracle, which is, you know, U.S. agriculture. And I think producers need to be educated on who the players are that are attacking the industry, how much money they have, their tactics. And only then can you come up with a plan how to fight back and defend the family farm and defend U.S. agriculture, which I think is worthy of defending.
We've seen bills like Prop 12 in California, some on the East Coast as well, but you mentioned states are proactively taking action on lab-grown meat. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so different states have taken different approaches. So Florida and Alabama have outright banned it, and you know, I think it's of note that after Governor DeSantis banned lab-grown meat in the state, Senator Fetterman, who really doesn't align politically at all with Ron DeSantis, came out and applauded him and said that this is the one thing, you know, the two of them would agree on, that we shouldn't be, you know, feeding people lab-grown meat and feeding kids lab-grown meat. So this truly is a bipartisan issue. It tends to get the attention of both Republicans and Democrats, especially people from agriculture states.
And that was Jack Hubbard. He's Executive Director for the Center of Environment and Welfare. I'm Jesse Harding Campbell.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Our current percentage of security that we take is up to 150%. The analysis that the team did on our portfolio clearly indicates that we do not need more than 125% security in order to secure the loan and protect the taxpayer's interests in that investment.
Administrator of the Farm Service Agency, Zach Ducheneau.
But with this rule, we're announcing that not more than 125% security will be taken in any loans that we make. In addition to that, we will offer the opportunity to have our security interest reduced to not more than 125% upon 3 years of payments as agreed on the existing notes. This is going to really help producers exercise some economic liberty and have some freedom to operate, because they'll be able to go to a conversation with a lender with assets that are free and clear of our encumbrances. You're going to get better terms. You're seen as a stakeholder.